You reach for the top olive oils and invest in the best pans. But in the kitchen, how well do you care for your greatest tool, your hands? When mine take a beating cooking and cleaning, which is often, I use Bag Balm to work its wonders on my poor, distressed skin. Created 125 years ago on a Vermont dairy farm, their soaps smell great and clean hands without stripping moisture, and their fast-absorbing lotion means I can quickly get back to cooking. Treat your hardworking hands to Bag Balm, every chef's best friend. Use code FOOD52 for 20% off your order on bagbalm.com. Good through 2024.
What is up? This is Peter J. Kim on the Food 52 Podcast Network, and you're listening to Counter Jam, the show that celebrates culture through food and music. This round of Counter Jam is a dope, hip-hop-fueled exploration of Filipino identity. Yeah, we'll get into sinigang, adobo, lechon, and all that good stuff, but we'll also explore the interplay of names, language, menus, and the immigrant experience with chef and author Dale Taldy, filmmaker and educator Evelyn Obamos, and hip-hop artist Ruby Ibarra, whose banging album Circa 91 will be the soundtrack to this episode. If you're like me and you're a fan of 90s hip-hop, then this is the album for you. It brings together the lyrical prowess of Tupac, the grittiness of Wu-Tang, and the storytelling and soulfulness of Lauryn Hill together into one perfect album. We're kicking things off with his first track called Us. This track is a booming fist bump to Filipino women everywhere. The chorus, which is in English and Tagalog, is Island woman, rise, nothing can stop you. Brown, brown woman, rise, know your roots. Here's Us by Ruby Ibarra with Rocky Rivera, Classy, and Faith Santillia.
Fuck a story arc if it don't involve no matriarch. Some mothers work from the ground up, they craft an air like ATR with the butterfly sleeves. Taka Philippine dana, pag nagsalita mga banatay bala. Wag magtaka kung ako ay makatabulok na sistema. Kurakot sa pera, bagsak. But we putting our heart into darkness. They putting these pigs in the office. Oh, you think you're schooling, but you hella lost. Cause you best see the boss while I top this. But look at my ate, she moving so cold. Can't hold a candle to her when she glow. Flick at the wrist with the ilaw she hold. Panago sa ilaw. She dripping in gold.
We pulling up in a jeepney. All of my soldiers greet me. Hand me bandanas and pull back my hammer. It's warfare when you see me. Skin you alive for my country. I live and die for my country. I kill a pig in a white hooded suit on the low for my country. They got evil plans in the devil's hands, but I don't pray cause I organize. They got new ways to impose strength, but I teach mine how to mobilize. We don't fight for the money, for the greedy, for the white man. All we want is our freedom and the right to live on our motherland.
Island woman rise, walang makakatigil. Brown, brown woman rise, alamin ang yung ugat. They got nothing on us, nothing on us, nothing on us, nothing on us.
Hell yes, that was Us off of Ruby Ibarra's album Circa 91. I have to admit that I went into making this episode knowing very little about Filipino culture. Sure, I've had my Filipino friends, and yes, I've eaten my fair share of lechon, but I realized just what a Filipino cultural noob I was when I couldn't figure out what word to use to describe the culture for the show. Was it Filipino, Filipinx, Pinoy, something else? My natural inclination was to be as inclusive as possible, or so I thought, and to use Filipinx. But then I had some doubts. So I consulted my friend Evelyn Obamos, a filmmaker who has been an educator for the Pinoy Pinay Educational Alliance. She shined a light on some of the complexities.
You're so right in that it's complex and complicated and layered. I personally prefer saying Filipino with a P-I-L-I-P-I-N-O. The history behind it is very complicated because we have been a country that's been, and I say we as a Filipino-American, but I claim the land as my own and my ancestors. And it's complicated because even the country's name in and of itself is actually named after our colonizer, King Philip of Spain. And so then you have this layer of like the PH sound. PH is like an F, which is a character that actually does not exist in our pre-colonial dialect. So there's this entire written system called Baybayin or Alibata, which is like the phonetic way to describe Baybayin.
Right.
And there is no F and there is no V, which for many people, if you hear a Filipino accent, you'll notice when we say fork, we say pork. But then you get deeper into the language and you realize, oh, it's very influenced by like Spanish. And so there's this very gendered nuance to the language as well. So Filipino for men, Filipina for women. And I think, you know, in the academic space, more people want to create inclusivity. And so the at letter was born, where it represents the A and the O. And then more inclusivity conversations take it further and introduce the X. The irony behind the at symbol and the X is that even with reclaiming this P over the F, the at symbol and the X symbol are also not native to the Philippine language.
Right.
And so it becomes this like almost, is American culture now imposing its ideas into the Philippine language?
Right.
And who are we to then say, oh, this is the right way to do it because it's gender inclusive? It's kind of funny because the word Pinoy, Pinay, is also originally from like American slang. And so it's kind of funny where it's just like, who's allowed? We're always asking like, who's allowed to make these rules and who is actually abiding by them? And I think there's like too much gatekeeping around it in a place where it's constantly evolving. I think it's okay for it to evolve, and it's okay to like learn that that wasn't the right way to look at it.
After talking to Evelyn and reading up on things, I decided to roll with Filipino. I understand and accept the shortcomings of this word, of course. But for what it's worth, both Ruby and Dale, my other interviewees, also prefer to use the word Filipino. Anyway, I wanted to address this first because word choice is important. Words are powerful. We have all been in situations where words have angered us, inspired us, or emotionally moved us, so it's important to be thoughtful about how we use them. While we're on the topic of language, I want to talk about names, and I'm going to tee things up by playing an interlude from Ruby's album Circa 91.
Class, please settle down. We'll continue taking attendance. Now, where were we? Brittany Green.
Here.
Piper Violet Haydenson. Oh, such a cute name, you cutie. Blake Harper.
Here.
Kimiko Mizokohatsu.
Here.
Yeah, let's just call you Kimmy H instead. Great. Ruby Ann Belize Ibarra?
Yeah.
Javier Joselito Cabo. How many names do you have? You'll be JJ.
Every school year, on the first day of school, I think my biggest fear wasn't what clothes did I have or what backpack or notebook did I have or what gel pen, but it was how bad is my teacher going to butcher my name on the first day of school? My name is actually four names, just like, you know, the standard Filipino name. I have two first names. My middle name is my mom's last name, and then, of course, my last name from my father.
That interlude just rang so true for me. Actually, not for me directly personally, because my name is as simple as can possibly be, Peter Kim. But I do remember, I mean, I grew up in the Midwest, and I remember in roll call just like holding my breath when the teacher would get to like my Indian American friends' names, and there'd be like the eyebrow raise and then like the kind of like chuckle at like, well, this is a tough one, you know, like, oh, come on.
My other guest, chef and author Dale Taldy, had similar memories.
Jamal. It's Jamal.
We'll just call you Jay.
It's funny looking back on it now. It's like that subtle inequality. It builds over time, right? It's like that person's refusal to, like, you know, you had this list of people for how many months, and you refuse to kind of understand how to say it or ask a question or make you go into it and you're gonna make the person feel stupid or inferior.
This got me talking to Dale about his own last name, which, as I understand it, is typically pronounced Taldy. But I noticed that he himself usually pronounced it Taldy.
Taldy is like Taldy.
Yeah.
You know, you have to have, it has, it's a span, it's a, it, it comes from a Spanish name. So you do put the, but like, you know, like I'm from Chicago and like I grew up there. And it was like Taldy. So everything has those hard vowels on it. So.
Well, and you might know this, but if I actually pronounce my family name, which is Kim, the way that it's supposed to be pronounced in Korean, it'd be Gim.
Yeah.
And like, ain't nobody calling me Peter Gim.
No. So like, yeah, we've had to make those sacrifices. But for me, it's like not much of a sacrifice. You know what I mean? Because I grew up like this. Yeah. You know what I mean? Some people are like, oh my God, you're not saying, you know, you're doing a disjustice to the culture by not saying your name pronounced correctly. I'm like, listen, man, it's not your name.
That's right.
It's not your name. And you didn't have to grow up with it.
No, it's interesting. I mean, it's a pretty standard system for naming for Korean American families. Well, it's interesting, first of all, is like Korea is actually, as you probably know, like not just a Christian country, but also a heavily Buddhist country. But for whatever reason, most Korean American immigrants are like Christian, Protestant, and they come over here and they've got their Korean family name, and then they give their kids the Korean given name, but then they need to give their kids like an English, like, you know, quote unquote American name. And like, what do? They look in the New Testament. And so that's why you have like
Peter's, John's,
David Kim, John Kim, Peter Kim, Paul Kim, you know, and like compound that with the fact that there's like basically five major family names in Korea. And it's like, mm-hmm. I could basically do a mental calculation of how many Peter Kims there are in the country from like that alone.
that's not a hard equation.
Yeah.
But no, man, I mean, it's like to English speakers, it's like, you're welcome.
Yeah.
It's like, listen, man, you know what? We're doing this to help you guys out. So you could, you know, you don't have to struggle.
Taking things back into school, Ruby and I talked about her experience in the cafeteria.
One of the things that my mom or my parents kind of wanted us to assimilate into American culture was the fact that my mom didn't actually prepare food for me to bring to school. I actually had food from the school cafeteria. Yeah. And, you know, up until that point, everything that I had ever eaten was Filipino food and rice. I was always used to having rice with every single meal. So I think kindergarten was still snacks. When I entered first grade and I stepped foot into the school cafeteria, I think that was one of the first moments of my life where, okay, I'm not going to be eating meals with rice anymore. And I think one of the first meals I had was a bean burrito from Taco Bell. Ooh, and I remember, you know, yum. It was served on those lunch plates. And I remember I got this and I was, I think I was kind of dumbfounded. I thought to myself, how do I eat this? Am I supposed to eat this like with a fork? And then I had to kind of, I think, you know, again, assimilate during that time. And I remember looking around in the cafeteria table and just kind of, you know, mimicking my classmates and seeing how, you know, they went about eating this burrito. And, you know, I picked it up and I had never tasted anything like that. And, you know, I think needless to say, for the rest of that school year, every other food that I was eating, you know, in the next several months was all new for me. Every day was a new taste test.
I love the idea of you stepping out of the rice matrix and being like, wait, there's a world beyond rice. And what is this like flat-shaped rice that's wrapped around these beans? when I went to grade school, I actually remember, and you just talking about this brought this back in my memories. I remember there being like a dividing line between the hot lunch kids and the cold lunch kids. And the cold lunch kids were the ones who brought their lunch in bags. And the hot lunch kids were like me, who went to the cafeteria for food. And at least the school I went to, it was kind of like the cold lunch kids had it way better than the hot lunch kids. Mm. And it was typically actually, I mean, my family wasn't like particularly poor. I wouldn't say we were wealthy by any means, but we weren't, I wouldn't say we were poor, but like I was a hot lunch kid. And most of my friends in my class were cold lunch kids. And so like they'd come with like their Capri Suns and like their Lay's potato chips and like their like sandwiches.
The Lunchables.
And all their like cool stuff. Or like Lunchables. Oh yeah. Oh my God. And I would be there getting my limp ass like rectangular pizza with like, you know, the iceberg lettuce and like two pieces of carrots on it.
I'm like, is this cheese?
Oh, I know. Exactly. And I remember the only thing I could ever barter with my friends was tater tots or croutons. That's the only thing I could ever like trade for anything else.
Yes, the
everything
school
else was
bartering.
Useless. Like, I won't take any of that. But yeah, so I used to always envy my like cold lunch friends. Anyway, good to meet somebody who's also on Team Hot Lunch.
I was primarily, you know, one of the hot lunch kids because, like I mentioned earlier, my parents wanted me to make sure that, you know, I got used to American food. But there was actually, I wanted to point out, there was a few times that I brought food from home. One story I want to share is when my mom packed chicken adobo with rice for me. And she put it in a Tupperware, threw it in a paper bag. I opened it at school. There was actually, I think, no microwave. So I just like, you know, straight up ate it as it was. And I remember some of my white classmates were actually sitting on the same cafeteria bench as me. And they looked over and I specifically remember this. And one of the girls asked, she says, ew, What is that? What are you eating? Is that even food? And I remember, like, of course, being like a seven, I think this was like first or second grade, being like a 7 year old kid at the time. I looked down at my lunch and all of a sudden, one of my favorite foods of all time becomes an embarrassment for me. And I think, damn, I shouldn't have brought this. And I, what actually ended up doing was I closed my lunch and I didn't eat it. And when I got home from school, I was deathly afraid that my mom was going to kick my ass for not eating. Of course, you don't want to waste food. Asian parents would, that's blasphemy if you waste food. Oh, yes. I remember once I got into at home, I went straight to the bathroom to avoid talking to my mom. And I flushed the food down the toilet so that she wouldn't see that I didn't eat it. And to this day, that is like one of the things that I regret. Like, why would I even listen, you know, to what a classmate had to say to prevent me from eating one of my favorite foods? I mentioned that to highlight, you know, that food was also kind of, it showed social status, I think, at school. And brought about, or for me, especially in my experience, it brought about, you know, me also understanding, you know, how certain types of foods were recognized with different communities.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's such a tragedy, I think, when something that's so central to your identity becomes a source of shame. And I like to imagine a revised scene where adult Ruby drops in from a time machine and like starts like slaying it on the mic, you know, to like explain.
I would have picked up that chicken, that drumstick and like taken a big bite and then be like, yeah, this is chicken adobo. And then like do a mic drop with the chicken leg. Like, you wish you had this.
Yes, exactly.
Dale, on the other hand, was fortunately spared being mocked for the food he ate. Or perhaps I should say he was as much a mocker as he was a mockee.
We all thought our food was weird.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I had so many friends who were just different cultures. You know, you go to my friend, you know, this Polish dude's house and like his mom has warm butter on the counter. I'm like, yo, isn't that going to go bad? She's like, it's butter, dude. It's not going to go bad. I was like, okay. You know, I'm like, you're putting, you know what I mean? Like, oh, here's a ravioli and you're putting jam on it. And I, you know, it was like a cheese pierogi. Right, right. Not only was it white people, but we all were like that against everyone else's food. We're like, dude, this dude just put jam on raviolis. That was weird as fuck. You know
Meanwhile,
what I mean?
I'm going to eat my preserved squid. Thank you very much.
Yeah, and rice. Like, that's totally fine. I'm going to eat my blood stew that we call chocolate meat. Not totally cool.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Dale touched on this, but in case you're not familiar with chocolate meat, it is one of the all-time greatest food misnomers. It's a savory stew made with pig organ meat cooked in a dark brown gravy made with pig blood, chilies, and vinegar, among other things. Delicious it may be, but chocolate it is decidedly not. So I want to take a moment to explore the backstory to Ruby's album Circa 91, which was released in 2017. This was Ruby's first album, and from what she told me, she agonized over what themes to explore with it. She knew it would be an important statement of what kind of artist she was. After receiving some advice from a friend, she knew.
I had that light bulb moment and I thought, you know, what other story makes me other than my immigrant story? I really felt like my story really starts when my family and I, or started when my family and I moved to the U.S. from the Philippines. Mm-hmm. And I thought, okay, so I do have a story to tell. And there is an authentic story that I have, you know, I mean, within my journey that is going to be only true to my experience. And, you know, as I thought about it a little bit more, I thought about my favorite albums growing up. I thought about Lauryn Hill, Smith's Education of Lauryn Hill. And even more recently, I think at that moment, that was around 2016, 2017, Kendrick Lamar's Good Kid, Mad City had just come out as mm-hmm. well. And as I thought more deeply about it, I realized that, you know, why I love these albums or even like Tupac's albums was that first and foremost, there was a lot of storytelling in the music. But that's I think right. Secondly, these albums were the type of records where if you hit play from song number one and you listen to the entire project all the way to track number 18 or 20, for me as a listener, I always felt like I knew exactly who that artist was by the time I finished the record, or I had a better glimpse of into their life. And I think, you know, thinking about that, that gave me a better approach or understanding on how to go about, you know, creating this narrative of an album. And so I knew that, you know, the overall umbrella theme would be about immigration, but falling within that would be language, would be family, assimilation.
And so Circa 91 flows seamlessly from track 1 to track 18, taking you into Ruby's experience as a Filipino-American immigrant. Here's another interlude from her album. It's called Descent.
We have just been cleared to land at Oakland International Airport. Please make sure your seatbelt is securely fastened.
That was a quick flight, huh?
Yeah, it was a lot shorter than I expected.
So you were in D.C.?
Yeah, I was there for the weekend for a college conference.
What were you doing out there?
Spoken word and rap. I do that on the side.
Oh, nice, nice. You're a performer.
Yeah, I perform on the weekends.
Oh, cool,
usually.
Cool. So where are you from originally?
Right now I live in San Lorenzo, the East Bay.
Okay, but I mean like, you know, like before that, where are you from?
Well, before San Lorenzo, I was living in Hayward, so yeah. But I've been living in the Bay Area for pretty much my entire life.
Yeah, but where's your family from, I guess?
Yeah, my family's from San Lorenzo, too.
Oh, okay, but like, you're not, I mean like originally where you're from, like... Ethnically, I guess. Where are you from?
Filipino.
Oh, Manny Pacquiao.
Yeah.
I gotta compliment you on your English. It's like, it's perfect.
I actually wrote the skits first before I even wrote a single piece of music. And I centered a lot of the topics and themes around the skits.
That's one of the really beautiful aspects of Circa 91 is just really... It's like a great menu, right? It just takes you from the first course to the last one seamlessly, and you really feel like you've gone through this sort of this journey right alongside you. And I'm right on the same wavelength with you, where like, and this is the reason why I kind of lament the rise of like the MP3 and like streaming music is just, you know, how that affects how people perceive albums and how that really happens. Because I think back to things like The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill and any Outkast album, basically, like, you know, there's just such a great progression to the tracks that I feel like you kind of lose when you start focusing in just on singles or like tracks that people are going to start streaming.
Yes, I agree. I feel like the experience back then, as especially as a hip hop listener, it was more immersive. Not only, you know, were digital tracks versus, you know, a physical album and or singles being released compared to a full body of work. But I think also that just having the booklet in your hands, I don't know about you, but for example, like whenever I picked up, you know, the newest like Wu-Tang album or... again, having like Miseducation of Lauryn Hill and going through that pamphlet, reading the liner notes, seeing who the producers and the writers were, the photos, I feel like that was all part of the presentation, which I agree with you is it's you know, pretty lost today.
This is another track from the album that reflects on a deeply personal aspect of Ruby's life.
I put myself in a place of vulnerability in talking about you know, being fatherless, you know, growing up and my parents going through a divorce and then the impact that it had in my relationships growing up.
Here's Broken Mirrors by Ruby Ibarra.
Reflections of a five-year-old looking in the rear view, wondering why she ain't got a father like her peers do. Instead, they got a babysitter. 10 years later, been a minute. But before you learn to lose trust, it takes a certain limit. Product of a single mother, fucked up when I think of love. Father figure packed up, it's never been enough. So I'm ducking when I catch a feeling. Hate is what my heart is feeling. Papa killed his fate a million times, so why do I forgive him? Popping pill when pain is killing. Popping veins, a proper feeling. People popping number just a prop to me to hurt. I'm willing. Porcelain turn poison in him. Probably won't prosper when I'm see. Without the poppy prophecies, the problems pouring in and pop the pussy, my position. Lying more than politicians. Call him daddy, guys, the villain. Opposite the opposition. Papa's never far from vision. Carbon copy, pop's reflection. Fuck a mirror, pain's a villain. Cause it's always Papa in him.
I keep looking in the mirror like, looking in the mirror like, why do I just hate myself? I keep looking in the mirror like, looking in the mirror like, I can't even find myself. I keep looking in the mirror like, looking in the mirror like, why do I just hate myself? I keep looking in the mirror like, looking in the mirror like, I can't even find myself.
Up next, we'll talk about Filipino home cooking and why Dale Taldy thinks we should never, ever call Filipino food expensive after this.
I can't find me. Reflections of an 18, daydream in a motel. Bruises and they both swell. He's toxic, but she won't tell.
At Total Wine & More, find the best gifts for everyone on your list, whether it's a Cabernet for sis or a single barrel bourbon that dad will love. With the lowest prices for over 30 years, you'll always find what you love and love what you find. Only at Total Wine & More. Spirits not sold in Virginia and North Carolina. Drink responsibly. B21. Where can you find the best gifts at great low prices that everyone will love? At Total Wine & More, of course, with so many great bottles to choose from. Find something for everyone on your list, whether it's a Cabernet for your sis, sparkling wine for a coworker, or a single barrel bourbon for dad. And if you need any help, just ask one of their friendly guides for advice. With the lowest prices for over 30 years, you'll always find what you love and love what you find. Only at Total Wine & More. Spirits not sold in Virginia and North Carolina. Drink responsibly. B21.
Ruby came over to the U.S. from the Philippines at the young age of 5. However, she still has glimmers of memories from where she was born, a place called Tacloban City in the Philippines.
I remember, you know, on the weekends, my uncles and my aunts would sometimes visit us from a nearby town, and they would bring lechon, which is roasted pig, every time we would have this annual fiesta in our town. And, you know, my family on my mom's side, she comes from a large family. She's the youngest of 7 brothers.
Oh, wow.
So you already know how many cousins I have. and you know, of those 7 brothers, I think only one has an only child. The other 6 have about 10 to 12 kids each. So that,
oh my goodness,
that already kind of, you know, hopefully you get a visualization of my family tree. So I come from a very large family, and because of that, you know, what comes with that is a lot of family get-togethers, and a lot of family get-togethers, obviously, you know, were spent with food. You know, just I remember my aunts, my grandma, my mom, all being in the kitchen. They would spend time in the kitchen from the morning all the way until mid-afternoon around 5 p.m. Then I would have some of my older cousins cleaning the rice outside, like in these large bamboo trays, and they would shake them to clean out like the impurities in the rice. And in addition to that, I would have my uncle sitting in the backyard roasting the pig while they were drinking Filipino beer in their hands. So memories like that are actually pretty vivid in my mind. And you know, when I think about food, I think about times like that. And I think because of that, I always associate food as a communal thing, as something that, you know, it involves the community, and it involves a lot of hands that you know, were put into preparation, and then everybody celebrating and you know, really taking in the food together. So even to this day, I think now, you know, that I'm living in the U.S. and I might not have, you know, my large family here living in this country, when I do have time to get together with my friends, it's always a large get together with, you know, an incredible amount of food as well, because I think it gives me nostalgia to those early moments in my childhood where I would remember my family, you know, surrounding us with a lot of food.
Yeah. Sounds like a family reunion is like a pig size family reunion. Like, you need the whole pig.
Chef Dale grew up in the Chicago area. His family get-togethers are similarly expansive affairs.
Oh, my God, dude. I mean, my wife laughs at it because, you know, there's single family homes and there's 40 or 50 people packed in this thing. You know, there's 2 tables, one all savory, one all dessert. There's probably a total maybe 45, 50 items.
Oh, my God.
I mean, turkeys, hams, wonton soup. Someone made prime rib. Someone made a whole lechon, like a pork belly lechon. Sometimes they'll bring a whole pig that they're like finishing off in the backyard. 5 or 6 different starches, at least 3 different noodles, pancit. Like, if someone went to the Philippines, there might be like some preserved like squid, like adobo squid that someone smuggled back home. You know, like the desserts are like all the way from, you know, pecan pie to pumpkin pie to like really traditional, like a coconut jelly dessert, rice cakes.
Wow.
Yeah. Like I've stopped like trying to do everything in one shot. You know, I'm just like, listen, like I start with my mom's soup. I get a plate of the oxtails, and then I get a little bit of the noodles, and then I chill out, and then I go and get some prime rib. And it's like a 5 or 6 hour affair.
Among this rich spectrum of Filipino dishes that Ruby and Dale ate growing up, I asked them which one stuck out the most.
I have always loved sinigang. So it's this tamarind soup. And how she usually made it was with pork and vegetables and tomatoes. And it's just been very heart. It's just a heartwarming type of dish. I think the equivalent of the American equivalent would be like chicken noodle soup. That is my chicken noodle soup. Every time I want to feel like I'm at home, or I want to be reminded of my childhood, or it's a cold, rainy day, I definitely like the only thing that would brighten up my day would be a big bowl of pork sinigang. And I remember specifically as a kid, you know, this was a dish that my mom would prepare. It's fairly quick to make in terms of the preparation, but it was the simmering time. Like, we would have to wait like 2.5 hours. You know, this was pre-crockpot days. So this was like, you know, 3 hours of just simmering the meat. And I think just that anticipation of, you know, waiting for the food to finally be cooked and then finally be served made the food taste even better. Yeah. And those were also, or why sinigang is also very special to me is because it's one of those dishes where I remember helping my mom out in the kitchen, and you know, she would start to assign, you know, I would be like 7 or 8 years old, but she would give me like one of those blunted like knives that aren't so sharp. Mm-hmm. And she would ask me to like cut up some veggies just to help. And it's moments like that where, you know, I got to, you know, share this, you know, special bond with my mom in the kitchen, and just having that one-on-one, experiences and alone time. And to me, that made, you know, preparing the dish even more special. And I got to learn how to make it from her. I don't know if there's, you know, some Filipino listeners out there listening. They might be able to relate. For me, something as simple as a piece of toast with peanut butter on it, and then folding that piece of toast and then dipping it in hot coffee, that to me will always be, I think, be the number one food on the top of my list that reminds me of my childhood. There were so many, you know, breakfasts and mornings where me, my mom, and my younger sister would just dip our peanut butter toast in our coffee. And then especially once that peanut butter starts to melt from the hot coffee, and then you see it like sliding down like the side of the bread. Oh my God. I have never tasted, like, I haven't even had a filet mignon that tastes as good as peanut butter toast coffee. Like, I promise you have to try it if you haven't tried it.
I am definitely trying this.
But I don't know if it might just be because of my nostalgic memories that make the food taste, that might make me think it tastes better than it is. But I just wanted to share that because that to me is, you know, the ultimate childhood food memory for me. I also want to note that I probably shouldn't have been drinking coffee at 5 years old, but hey, it already happened, so can't change that.
Hey, I mean, honestly, like the sort of like food nerd side of me is like, wow, you overcame an aversion to bitterness at such a young age. Usually kids can't drink coffee until much later because they're just like can't get over the bitterness, but that's impressive.
Oh, it was super sweet. It wasn't bitter at all. It had like cups and cups of sugar and cream in
okay
it.
So that's a key part, right?
Dale's early experiences continue to inform how he cooks today.
The things that stuck with me are like, obviously my mom's adobo. It's like Filipino national dish, you know, but she would do it with pork or chicken or combine it. And then she would put like chicken liver in it. And I'm like a chicken liver. Yeah. I love liver, like in any form, like it's my jam.
Yeah.
And that's where I learned, like, I think that it started early with my mom. Things that I didn't even like when I was a kid, but I saw it made an impression now. It's like, I have a dish on my menu now that it's Chinese black vinegar, soy, heirloom tomatoes. I do like these hot and sour bulbo pearls and like just a bunch of fresh herbs. Watching my mom pick tomatoes out of the garden and just put a little bit of soy sauce on it. And that's it. It's so simple. Not olive oil, none of that stuff. She just put a little soy on it. And it was just like, you start to understand that she was building my palate back then.
Today, Dale is one of the best in the biz. He's opened numerous restaurants and has become a recurring contestant and judge on the TV show Top Chef. I asked him what his family thought about his food, and this opened up an interesting conversation about perceptions of prices and what that means about how we think about ourselves.
In terms of like your own like fine dining takes on Filipino food, how does your family actually perceive that?
They're the same. I mean, come on, let's be real, man. Your parents, every auntie and mom goes into these Korean restaurants, or they go into my restaurant, and they're like, you know, it's nice, but it's not Filipino food. I'm like, listen, I never said it was Filipino food. It's like, yeah, and it's expensive. I go, well, what do you want me to do about that? You know what I mean? This isn't a cafeteria style point. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, that's, you know, that colonization mentality, right? Is that someone put it in our heads that everything we do is lesser than. We got to get that shit out of our heads and demand that our food is worth the amount that you're charging for it. But it's that colonization, that, you know, mentality that everything we do is lesser than somebody else's, or that it's lesser than because it's not white.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think it really boils down to that, right? Because it's not coming from a white Anglo-Saxon point of view, or it's this European style of dining, it's lesser than. Because you don't say shit for going to these 3-star Michelin restaurants that are, you know, John George, Danielle, the Bernardin, paying $350, $400, $500 for these restaurants. You don't say shit about it.
Yeah.
They go eat at a Filipino restaurant, and my God, that was expensive. It's like, yo, you paid $50 for dinner for 2 people. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. No, this reminds me, I took my mom once, was supposed to be like a really special meal for her, but to this restaurant I loved in the East Village. I don't know if you ever went there, Oiji.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved their food. And I went there with my mom, and the whole time she was kind of like had her brow furrowed because, you know, it wasn't like banchan for days and like everything was just like, you know, it's fine dining, right? And so afterwards she just came out being like, you know, it just didn't feel right. Like we should be getting more kimchi. We should be getting more like all this like side dishes, and it was so expensive. And like even though I picked up the bill, it just was like so contrary to what like she felt like it should be like that it just didn't even like vibe with her.
And it's our own people, you know? That's the hard part, exactly. Is that we're sabotaging the culture. We're our own worst.
Oh yeah.
I try and never listen, if a restaurant isn't good, if I eat at a Filipino restaurant and it's just not good, I'm just not gonna, you know what I mean? Like I'll say I don't think it was good, but I won't say it was expensive.
Yeah.
That's the one thing that I'll get out of my head, is that I'll say that I won't ever say something was expensive. Because the minute you start saying that it's expensive, it gives everyone else who isn't Filipino, Korean, Chinese, whatever, the right to shit on it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, no, man, we need to be uplifting. We need to be saying it's worth this. We are worth it. We are and you know, it really comes down to that. We're valuable, right?
Yeah.
We're valuable. Our culture is valuable. It's more valuable than just your nanny. It's more valuable than the nurse that, and that's the fucked up thing, is like, you all know Filipino people. They took care of you at probably your hardest times. But we're more than, you know, your brother's girlfriend or your cousin dated a Filipino girl. We're more than that. You know, we were one of the first, one of the first Asian communities in the United States.
That's right.
In Louisiana. So.
And, you know, like, I think it's like 13th most populous country on the planet, 170 different languages, so much diversity and history there. It's just like, it's wild. And it's actually wild that you could even distill that down to saying that's like Filipino, just, you know.
Oh, it's so hard. I mean, it
encompasses so
much. Well, I think that's also why we are kind of an enigma to a lot of people, is because they don't know, you know, we're East, Southeast Asian, but we all have Spanish last names and, you know, none of us are good at math. I'm just, you know, we all got rhythm, but no, it's hard for them to kind of put us into these categories. So, and I think that's what, why people get confused about the culture.
Taking a step out of fine dining, Dale and I talked about the kinds of home-cooked Filipino dishes he makes for his parents and family in Chicago. His answer was surprising.
My family doesn't eat my Filipino food. I made lechon kawali the other day and my parents loved it. But when it comes to Filipino food, I stay away from it. And that's my tortured relationship with understanding my own culture. And that's on me. And I'm trying to figure this out for my son and my others, you know, my family, because I want them to grow up knowing that they're Filipino. But it's hard when you don't, when yourself, I've had a tortured relationship with it. I do. I have a hard time with it. Not with being Filipino, but cooking Filipino food, because it's never like,
Dude,
I'm a perfectionist. Like I always expect my food to be dope. But when I make Filipino food and it's not as dope as my mom's, it's like, fuck. Like, yo, I do this for a living. How can I not reverse engineer? I can reverse engineer a lot of food. But when I make food, Filipino food, and it's not like that, it's so hard. And you know, Filipinos are the same as Koreans, where the pantry isn't large.
Yeah.
Sometimes it just doesn't taste the way my mom's does. And then, I don't know. It's just, it's hard. It's just, I feel fake kind of making it sometimes.
Yeah.
I don't know if that sounds.
Yeah. I mean, like straight up, like I personally, I don't feel like I know Korean culture really. Like my only connection to Korea is through my parents. And it's even like language wise, like I only speak Korean with my parents. Literally there's like two people on the planet with whom I speak Korean, and everybody else, I don't speak a lick of Korean. Because like,
is it because your Korean's not good?
It's not good, and like it's a very specific way of speaking Korean that I learned with my family that is just like will draw like confusion and then in some cases scorn. Like if I try to use it elsewhere.
Yeah, they'll think you're dumb. Oh, yeah. Like, he's a dummy.
Oh, like when we're at the Korean restaurant, my friends like I'll look at me and they're like, "Go ahead and order, Peter." And I'm like, "I'm gonna go ahead and order in English right now because like, yeah."
Damn, you don't even order food, Korean food in Korean restaurants in Korean?
No, because like it just. I mean, the dish name, sure, but I'm not like doing the whole conversation thing in Korean because like it's just I just speak Korean with my parents. But yeah, I mean, like so when it comes to like cooking food and recipes. I mean, I totally feel like I'm faking it when I'm making food for my family's Korean food, except like I'm just trying to like now like really absorb the way my parents make it because they are the only real true connection I have to my actual like rooted identity as a Korean. So yeah, I feel that.
No, that's the same. I feel the same way. And it's hard for me. Like I know I'm Filipino, but like I'm trying to figure out my connection to the Philippines. And it's a lengthy story. And hopefully at some point I could like write about it, because to me it's a journey, you know what I mean? When I go to the Philippines, it's like I know what the food is and I know what people are saying, especially if I go to like to the region my parents are from, like I understand slowly, if they talk slowly I know what they're saying, but you always kind of feel like an outsider. You know what I mean? That's why we're Korean American, you're Korean American, I'm Filipino American. We're a subset of a culture, right? We're a different category, and I think it's an amazing thing to also create your own category, right? Trailblaze through it. And this is what we're doing today. And this is what Filipino food looks like now, you know, and it doesn't have to be just adobo, you know, it can be variations or our takes on, or what we loved about the food applied to newer things. And not necessarily saying it's better than, but just, that's one other thing I hate. You know, I'm doing elevated X, Y, and Z food. Ugh. It's like, okay, was it? Did it need to be elevated? Like, why? It was perfectly fucking good the way it was. I don't, you know, you know, and I think that's what people, that's also some of that language where people, and it's usually white people who do that shit.
Oh, hell yes.
Oh, I'm doing L.
And you're never elevating gnocchi.
Yeah, no. Oh, no, don't even touch it. God forbid you touch gnocchi, or God forbid you try and elevate coq au vin or steak frites or any of that shit. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's like, you know.
Gnocchi is dumplings, like just doughy dumplings made with potatoes.
Yeah, don't fuck with it.
Exactly. And like coq au vin is a stew.
Don't fuck with it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but don't. Like, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we got to get used to that. I think that's, you know, the only way, you know, some, you know, our culture, Asian culture, even we are guilty of it. And, you know, that's how we say justify the price tag sometimes, instead of just saying, hey, this is what it is, man.
Yeah, yeah.
I gotta say, I was definitely picking up what Dale is putting down. While I do think there's been a lot of progress in terms of inclusion in the industry, it's still very much the case that $20 for a plate of ravioli makes sense, but $20 for a plate of dumplings is no bueno. In both cases, it's dough wrapped around fillings. $20 for gnocchi is sensible, but $20 for rice cakes? Hell no. And the messed up thing is that deep down, I feel this way. It's a hard bias to shake, but shake it we must. All right, this brings us to the classic counterjam closer. The question, if you were stuck on a deserted island and could only eat one Filipino dish for the rest of your life, what would it be? Here's Ruby's answer.
Probably some sort of silog. So what a silog dish is, it's basically, it involves garlic fried rice. It has a fried egg. And when I say fried egg, Peter, I'm talking about the legit fried egg. The one that has the crispy, the fried edges, the whites are crispy, but the yolk is still runny. But I would say like the meat, I don't know if I can decide on the meat right now. Let's just go with sisig. I love pork sisig. It's diced up pork meat and it's grilled. So I would love to have, you know, sisig meat with the fried egg and garlic fried rice. I wouldn't mind eating that for the rest of my life.
Oh, that's dope.
And Evelyn's answer.
I would say chicken wings without a doubt, like specifically flats. Sorry to all the drum met lovers out there, but it's called chicken wings for a reason. And I will settle this debate with anyone at any time. I settled it with someone in Vegas while he was pissed drunk and I won. So just to tell you, like, chicken wings are superior. And I would have that prepared in like a sinigang, a dry rub style.
And lastly, here's Dale keeping up the meat trend with his response.
It'd probably be pork adobo, pork belly adobo.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm like 95% pork, so it's like my whole, it's probably, that's why I have to eat chicken and rice right now. It's because I eat a lot of pork. I love it. I just, it's fatty, it's rich, it's texturally, I mean, you know, it's just unctuous. It's sweet, it's sour, and it has, you know, the sweetness from the pork, but it has a sour, the umami. I love it. I'm like, also, this is like so basic me to say that, though. Like, isn't it? I'm like the most basic.
No, this is what you're eating every day, though.
I should be going to brunch tomorrow and eating avocado toast and having a Bellini.
I mean, I think that's kind of what the question gets at, right? Is it's going to be something you're going to eat for the rest of your life. So it's not going to be something that's out there. It's got to be pretty much right in the strike zone.
Yeah, I mean, it is what you, it's got to be what you love, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It's got to be what you love.
Yeah, yeah. All right, pork adobo, just straight up or with rice?
Yeah, pork belly with rice. I mean, that's a meal. You don't need anything else. That's my new album, dude.
Right on.
95% pork.
Don't tell the 95% pork. Love
it'll be up there. It'll be up there with Donda and Certified Lover Boy.
Hell yes.
On this next track, pay attention to the shifting rhythm of Ruby's rhymes. In hip-hop terms, this is what we call spitting fire. She told me she was inspired by rappers like Eminem and how they use their voice like a rhythmic instrument. The end result is spectacular. Here's Playbills by Ruby Ibarra.
We pay, they rob us. These snakes don't want us. Each day we all play this game that they taught us. In God that we trust, but they preying on us. He ate them, we scraped till we hate him both us. My mama's education on me, shit still. From accounting to McDonald's just to pay this bill. And we trying to sell a soul just to make this deal. But the people in control are gonna hate me still. And we trying to save face, but they paint us with a brown face. Colonize the tongue, will never like it how my name tastes. Made across the ocean, motherfuckers better make way. 7,000 miles, and they don't want us in the first place. These days was a pay rate for a briefcase. Times 8, that's a death rate, and it's prepaid. Free wage, minimum pay, ain't no leeway. These stakes only get raised when the greed makes AK over these chases. It's a payday, but wait, laying down straight on the pay pay. Replay, cut them up great like a DJ. While they throwing us fake just so we pay. Brown face was a made late in my heyday. These days, but you made late in your grave way. Mayday, play the game straight or you meet fake. Green face, how the ink tastes when it bleed hate. Seek change, but we shortchange an exchange rate. Food chain, keep your cake straight or you get ate. Self-made, everything's fake, but we fixate on things that we don't make till we self-pay. Watch me make it rain. Bitches don't know that I'm paid though. Watch me make it rain. I made that dollar from a peso. Watch me make it rain. Watch me make it rain.
Watch me make it rain. And that's a wrap for this episode. Stay tuned for the rest of season 3 of Counter Jam. We've got some phenomenal guests like Bebel Gilberto and Ziggy Marley lined up. And if you like what you heard, please do drop a friendly review on Apple Podcasts. Shout out to our guests, Dale Taldi, Evelyn Obamos, and Ruby Ibarra. Shout out to Ruby for, first of all, making Circa 91, which is an album that you should go and listen to right away, and for letting us use it for this episode. Shout out to Food 52, Harry Sultan, and Coral Lee, the talented producer of Counter Jam who makes each episode happen. I'm Peter J. Kim, and I'll catch you on the next episode of Counter Jam.
Ayaw ka baraka, unang titinawa, hirahain mo po na ako